Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature, Text Number 12. Yata chalasta abhasa.
Yata chalasta abhasa.
Sthalasthena vadrishyate.
Sthalasthena vadrishyate.
Svabhasena tathasu. On the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. Purport. Maybe everybody can shift a meter forward. Those who come late don't have to suffer the ignominy of having to walk through everybody. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as the sun is realized first as a reflection on water and again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. Purport. The example given herewith is perfect. The sun is situated in the sky, far, far away from the surface of the earth, but its reflection can be seen in a pot of water in the corner of a room. The room is dark, and the sun is far away in the sky, but the sun's reflection on the water illuminates the darkness of the room. A pure devotee can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything by the reflection of his energy. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that as the presence of fire is understood by heat and light, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although one without a second, is perceived everywhere by the diffusion of his different energies. It is confirmed in the Isopanishad that the presence of the Lord is perceived everywhere by the liberated soul. Just as the sunshine and the reflection can be perceived everywhere, although the sun is situated far away from the surface of the globe. Om Ganatinandasya Sadataya Chakchurvinitamena in understanding how we can see Krishna within everything, practically speaking, the material energy that Queen Kunti explains, we did discuss it. Is this, you mentioned this yesterday, wasn't it? Maya Jivani Gacchanam, the curtain of the material energy covers the presence of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is covered by the curtain of the material energy. So how to pierce that covering, or how to draw back the curtain so that we can see Krishna within everything is being described here. This is a method or technique, if you like, to learn how to see the presence of Krishna within everything. You know, sometimes things happen to us, not sometimes, always something's going on. And it's not always easy to see that behind the workings of the immediate cause, it's not always easy. You know, we can see that we've been hurt, or we've been wronged, or we've been criticized, or whatever, by someone, our friends or our enemies. There's always this interaction, social interaction, where we get hurt. Or even the material energy, just like Krishna was driving home the other day in that big storm, as he hit a pool of water on the freeway, lost control of a car, spun around, got hit by a truck. Took her to hospital because she was hurt, not badly, but for observation. So, you know, when something like that happens, there was a pool of water, the truck hit me. So, you know, we could say, oh, it was the pool of the water and the truck. But behind all of that, it's not easy to see that ultimately there's the hand of the Supreme in all of these activities. Or is it Prabhupada often quotes that Divi Nitrina? What's that verse? Well, everything ultimately is directed by the Supreme. To see that, to see the immediate cause and effect, and then behind that, the workings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And especially when we're, as devotees, we're meant to see Krishna as a loving God. We're supposed to see God as a loving personality, and sometimes we just get, whoa, why me? What did I do wrong? Of course, you know, these events shock us into, hopefully, into the realization that we're not such wonderful personalities. Otherwise, wonderful personalities don't have these kind of things go wrong. Just to remind us. And to see, you know, to see Krishna's hand in everything that takes place requires depth, depth of character, depth of understanding, depth of perception. And so the Bhagavatam, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us instructions on how to observe the material energy, not just from the external happenings, the external features, but to look beyond those features and see the person. Because the material energy, when it acts, it appears very often to be impersonal. Right? And so it can be very abrupt. Very, very abrupt. Unforgiving. I remember once when I was a kid, in high school, so it must have been what? 5, 7, 12, 13, 14, I was riding along on my bike. No hands. Right? I try to ride on my bike now with no hands, I have to be very careful, because in those days I could ride for, long distances, no hands. But I got too close to the curb of the road. Then all of a sudden, I was sitting on the ground with the bike on top of me. What happened? What happened? How did that happen? Because, smart addicts often come a cropper very quickly. Huh? So, but then I've kind of left wondering, why did that happen? So the material energy can be very abrupt. You're cruising along, thinking, I'm doing great, and then all of a sudden, and it's all exploded. And difficult to perceive behind those, there was a couple in Climb Mount Warning the other day, right? Then there was a big storm came through. They got hit by lightning. And one of the boy, I think, he died. It was a tiny girl. They were camping on the top of Mount Warning. And then all of a sudden got hit by a thunderbolt. So, especially in these chapters of the Bhagavatam, and we're seeing here a development of the various features of the material energy, and they're described in the creation of the Virat Rupa, or the universal form. And so we see these the features of material energy described, and how they, each one of those features relates to a particular portion of the form of the Lord, to help us see that behind the workings of what can be on a facile observance of the material energy, just looking at the external features, as being something impersonal. If we look at the connections between the features of the material energy and the description of the Virat Rupa, we start to imagine, or we start to create a vision of the personality of Godhead, and all of the features of the material energy, each one of them has a connection to the personal form of the Lord. And so this is a meditation. It's a practice. It's a deliberate conception of how each of the material, how the features of the material energy can be connected to a part of the personality of Godhead. That's why the Virat Rupa is such an important beginning of understanding the personality of Godhead and being able to see the Lord in the form of the material energy. As dividing things up, looking at the features. From many different angles. I am the light and the heat of the sun. So we were discussing the other day how the manifestation of the eyes of God facilitate the vision of all the living entities so that they can see. And of course, Krishna explains how, and it's described in various places, how the eyes of God are actually the sun and the moon. So that in the daytime we can see, in the nighttime we can see with the light of the moon and the light of the sun. So when one's meditated very thoroughly on all of these different aspects of the material form, the material energy, and is able to connect them, the trees and the herbs and the grasses and the hairs on the skin of the Virat Rupa. But we can speak when a devotee is walking around, then is able to see the personality of Godhead within the material creation. It's a meditation. It requires some practice in order to do that. When Yogeshwara was with Srila Prabhupada in Paris, he asked Prabhupada, how do you see everything? How do you see everything? And Prabhupada explained that the pure devotee sees, first of all, the soul. Because this is the first teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul. So again, when we're looking at each other, we don't necessarily see the soul first, we see the body. But we're supposed to see shastra chakshus, we're supposed to see the vision of the scripture, so that's why we need to meditate on these descriptions. May not be immediately apparent. It's not immediately apparent because, you know, when we look at the newspaper, we don't see any, we don't hear any reference to the soul or really rarely. We just see the external forms. The Russians did this, the Americans did that, the Chinese did this. It's all based on a very gross bodily external identification. But the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic scriptures deconstruct the material energy so that we can see the spiritual energy working behind the covering of the material energy. So the Prabhupada says the pure devotee sees the soul first, then the super soul. And he explained this to Yogeshwara. And Ishvaraha Savabhutanam Ritesh Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayam Savabhutanam Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. So then the working of the material energy under the direction of the super soul who's situated within the heart of all of the living entities. What an amazing thing, you know, that Krishna is able to orchestrate the workings of all of the material energy in its complexity. Incredibly complex, the working of the material energy. And in one universe, so many living entities, all being organized and orchestrated by the super soul. Because mind you, when we look at our body, one body, how complex and how complicated it is. You know, the fact that we exist in this body is just nothing short of a miracle. You know, the fact that we've even been born, the amount of things that can possibly go wrong, right, between when we're conceived and when we come out of the womb is just extraordinary. The fact that we even exist is just amazing. That's just one body, right? Not possible for us to understand how all that works. Not at all possible. Inconceivable. I remember there was a movie not recently, The Body. There was a movie called The Body. That was probably 20 years ago now I think about it. But when I was a teenager, I read the book. They say, you know, before you go to the movie, you should always read the book. And that's when I read that book called The Body as a teenager. I was just astounded. The fact that we come out of the womb is impossible to happen. But it does. And it's repeated and repeated again and again and again. The complexity of the material energy is just stunning. Yet it all works very smoothly under the supervision of the super soul. And so for Krishna, these things are not very difficult at all, actually. It's not difficult for him to do anything. You see, the material creation working perfectly. And this is just a fragment. Vasudevadatta said to Lord Chaitanya, if it's your desire, then please liberate this whole universe and let all of their sins come upon me. He's very compassionate to her. He said, let them all be liberated and go back home, back to Godhead, and let all of their sins come upon me. I'll take the reaction. And Lord Chaitanya laughed and he said, this universe is just like a mustard seed in a bag of mustard seed. So what's the loss if you lose one mustard seed out of a bag of mustard seeds? What are you getting? Huh? So we think, oh, we're so important. This is a big universe. But for Krishna, this is just a little tiny place. In amongst all of the other universes, you know, now, but it's described now. Our universe, Lord Brahma, he's only got four heads. Because it's not a very big place. There's universes that are much, much bigger where the Brahmas have more heads. So much going on within the creation. Very difficult to understand and to appreciate. But we're given these opportunities for meditation in the Bhagavatam. The sun is situated in the sky. Huh? You can't look at the sun to try and work out what it is, what happens. You go blind. Huh? Amazing. But we can appreciate the presence of the sun by looking at its reflection in a pot of water. Even you can't even look at that. But you can't even look at the reflection of the sun in a pot of water without it damaging your eyes. Right? You can't look at this one. Interesting, I've not seen this. Well, I have seen this because I've read it obviously before, but interesting also, that reflection can be reflected on a wall. That you can look at. That reflection you can look at. So, Prabhupada gives the example. You can be sitting in the room, You can be sitting in a room where the sun's shining in the room and say, oh, the sun is in the room. Although the sun actually isn't in the room, the sun's still in the sky. But we were sitting, you know, in the summertime when the sun's in the room, we think, ooh, turn on the AC. Right? It's hot. But in the wintertime when the sun is in the room, we feel comfort. So, oh, the sun is in the room. Oh, that's good. Right? Yet the sun is actually... So we can understand how, from this example, we can understand how Krishna is situated in his original position. And Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Vishnu Purana, Ekadesha Stitas Jagya, that he's situated in his place, his original position, like a fire in a fireplace. Ekadesha Stitas Jagya. I can't remember all of that verse, but just as a fire is situated in a fireplace, and that's its original location, but still its presence can be experienced all throughout the room, especially in wintertime. We appreciate, in the summertime, we don't appreciate a fire in a fireplace. Mind you, that's how traditionally you cooked your meals, right? So you had a Torah heat in the summertime, in the kitchen especially. Cooking in the kitchen in summertime is an austerity. Right? You know, they say, if you don't like the heat, don't go in the kitchen, right? Especially if you're cooking with korma. For those who've had that honour, the pleasure and the honour of cooking with korma, there's more heat coming out of the kitchen than from the flame. So, ekadesha stitas jagya, the fire is situated in one place, but the heat and the light are emanating from the fire all throughout the room, and they can be felt and appreciated. So similarly also, Krishna is situated in the spiritual world, but he's also manifest all over the whole creation through his different energies. And so this part of the Bhagavatam is teaching us how to understand material energy and understand it as an emanation of the Supreme, right? Of the Supreme Personality. And so there are all of these different descriptions of how each feature is related to a different portion or a different part of that, of the body of the Supreme Person. The room is dark. Material energy is actually dark. Right? Tamasi ma. It is just ignorance. We're in a state of avidya. We don't know. We can't see Krishna naturally or automatically or spontaneously. So we need instructions. And so that's why the Bhagavatam uses these illustrations. The Virat Rupa is explained three times in the Bhagavatam? Three different places. Is that right? Yeah, three times. So we can understand this is when something is being, Prabhupada says, when something's been is said three times, like, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasjeva, 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 six times. So certainly three times, and in that case twice, three times, then we can understand that's very important. So this description of the Virat Rupa given three times in the Srimad Bhagavatam is important. Why is it important? Because it gives us an opportunity to understand how to see God within the workings of the material energy, because otherwise it is just not a natural, innate quality of those of us who are covered by ignorance. And so, by giving these examples and by giving the relationship with the Supreme, we're given some vision. Our vision is to see, we want to see the soul first. We see the forms. He's fat. She's skinny. He's brown. She's white. She's attractive. He's ugly. Or she's ugly. He's attractive. But this is what we see. And that, we can't, it's almost automatic that we do that. Right? Almost automatic when we see something. Holden motor car, Ford motor car, Mazda, Toyota. Right? When I was a kid, that's what I used to do. Oh, look at that car. Oh, what about that one? Ooh. Spent my time looking at motor cars. Right? Used to stick pictures of motor cars up on the wall. When the new Holden come out, oh wow, that's fantastic. Look at the new Holden from 1974 now, and I think, oh, look at that bomb. But we're just looking at the external. We're not looking at the internal. So that requires practice. Otherwise we just revert back to seeing all of the external features all of the time. So the Bhagavatam keeps on reminding us, here's how to see the position of Krishna within the material energy, so that we're Krishna conscious rather than material, you know, conscious of Maya, that which is not always changing. Right? Every year there's a new model car coming out. So we're mesmerized by the latest version created by the material energy. But in another year's time, that'll be old and there'll be a new one. So we have to look beyond that ephemeral changing of the material energy to the constant presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within everything. So this is an example how to see that. Prabhupada says when an example, it's like when we need to be so Krishna conscious that when we see the material energy working, we don't see the external. We actually, what Prabhupada says, we see the super, we see the soul, we see the super soul. Then we may see the forms of the material energy working. Such, and Prabhupada gives the examples, like a parent, when they see the shoes of their child, then they automatically think of their child. Alright, you know, when you walk, when you put your shoes in a rack in a temple, right? And then you see one of your friend's shoes, you immediately think of your friend. Oh, look, there's so-and-so. That's not him, it's his shoes. Huh? Or your children. There's Taravali's shoes, but immediately mum looks at it and thinks, oh, there's Taravali. Huh? It's not Taravali, it's actually his shoes. So, the devotee, when they see the workings of material energy, then immediately we should be seeing Krishna, not the external energy working. So we see, there's Krishna working in the movements of the energy of the creation. A pure devotee can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything, by the reflection of his energy. Parashya shakti vividhaya suryate. Everything is ultimately the energy of Krishna moving or being moved by Krishna. And the pure devotee is able to see by study of the Shastra, the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, is meant for us to, we start our day with the Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can see Krishna working through the material energy all throughout the rest of the day. We can see things from a philosophical bent rather than just looking at everything from the external manifestation of the material energy. It is confirmed in the Isopanishad that the presence of the Lord is perceived everywhere by the liberated soul. Just as the sunshine and the reflection can be perceived everywhere, although the sun is situated far away from the surface of the globe. So Krishna is far away, in one sense. Impossible to reach the spiritual world by material endeavours. But through the process of Krishna consciousness, which basically for us begins Shravanadi Sudha Chitta, it begins with hearing and chanting. And especially part of that process, to look at things from a very philosophical or from this point of view of Shastra Chakshus, to see everything with the eye of Shastra. We study these descriptions of the Virat Rupa so that we can, and this chapter is called Understanding Material Nature. It's very difficult to understand material energy unless one can cultivate this vision, seeing the working of the material energy as a reflection of the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's situated in the spiritual world, but also situated at the same time in the expansions of his material energy. It's not a disconnect. So as I mentioned the other day, one of the goals or the aim of Krishna consciousness is to see that everything belongs to Krishna. Right? When we see that everything belongs to Krishna, then we stop thinking, oh, that's mine. Or, ooh, that looks nice. I'll enjoy it. Right? And so, hang on a second. Oh, this is Krishna's. Right? Idam Krishnaya Idam Namama. Fundamental principle of Krishna consciousness. Because when we start seeing things as, or when we see everything as belonging to Krishna, then we have to use it properly. Right? Ooh, yeah, that looks cool. I'll have that. Because then we start thinking it's mine. Right? So, connecting everything to Krishna gives the right sense of proprietorship. And the material energy, Maya, is interesting because she's designed by Krishna in such a way as to bewilder us so that we do think, ooh, yeah, not bad. Huh? That looks good. I'll have one of those. Huh? Actually design. And so we have to think, ouch. Yes, okay. The potential for enjoyment is there. I could do that, but I know it has problems. Problematic. Better to recalibrate this mentality and start to see things as belonging to Krishna. So that then I'll use it more responsibly. That's maturity, children are known for their selfishness, right? We just play all day, right? And usually get in trouble, right? Whereas grown-ups are meant to use things properly for the proper utilization for the benefit of everybody. So the proper utilization of everything is to see it as Krishna's property and then use it accordingly so it will be beneficial for everyone. Okay, I'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
I'm sorry.
Krishna,
How do you distinguish between a mere coincidence and timely reciprocation of Krishna?
I missed everything you said there.
How do you distinguish between, between timely coincidence and mere coincidence and timely reciprocation of Krishna?
According to the Shastra, there's no such thing as coincidence. There's no such thing as an accident. Right? No such thing. Nothing is accidental. Because accident means, it wasn't meant to happen to me. It must have been somebody else that deserved such a thing. You know? And so therefore, you know, surprises or accidents are actually we're getting our reactions. For the devotees, Prabhupada says reactions are actually embraced. Difficulties are embraced. Because there's something to be learned from every so-called catastrophe. And a devotee is thankful that even though something's a catastrophe, it would have been far worse if we weren't being looked after by Krishna. Because there's always that sense, and sometimes this is hard. It's, you know, when everybody's picking on you and politics and this and that and the other thing, and you're being defamed or whatever, to accept that as Krishna's mercy and his blessings, and that he's actually looking after you. So we have to look very, very often deeply into what's happening to us in our lives and learn to appreciate that Krishna's actually looking after us and wants us to benefit from the problems and the difficulties. So there's that verse up there on top of the the prayer by Lord Brahma, where he's, you know, whenever there's a difficulty, the devotee offers his prayers to the Lord. Appreciating the difficulties and understanding that it should have been worse, right? But that Krishna's behind the workings of the materialism and it's meant for my purification. So no such thing as accidents or chance, right? Sudhir.
From scientific background, he was a scientist, and he was saying that he sees Krishna everywhere in the form of energy, and he also said that he connects with that form of Krishna. So he was actually questioning that why do we have to connect with the personal form of Krishna when I see him in everything? So how to answer this?
Why do we have to connect to a personal form when we can appreciate him in his impersonal form? Well, understanding the impersonal form is good, but why not? Isn't it better to know the whole person? Huh? And it's kind of like, it hurts when you're, say, I'm just trying to think of an example. You know, at school, you sometimes would bully others. Did you ever do that? We never did it, right? But, you know, you'd pick on somebody. The whole class would pick on somebody sometimes, right? But a little bit on who was actually doing it. You know, bang. You stand on this side, but you hit him on that side. Bang. Well, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. So, you know, when you're dealt with in that impersonal way, it hurts. And it's designed to hurt. It's designed to hurt. But The personal dealings are far more relishable and appreciated, so that you know why a person is reciprocating. You know, because in one sense we've neglected and separated ourselves from our relationship with God. Because it's embarrassing. Right? We have to reveal our motivations and our purposes. And because we've separated ourselves from God, He's also separated Himself from us. And through the material energy, He belts us. Right? And that's Maya's job, is to slap us around so that we'll wake up to who we really are. Right? But as long as we're in a situation where we want to ignore those lessons, we want to blame everybody else. Ours, his fault, that fault, this one, that one. What accident, chance, right? Not accept the responsibility, then we're going to remain covered, and our relationship with the original person and our own personality are going to remain covered. So, some people feel that that impersonal feature is enough, or it's the supreme, right? Especially because the negative conception of the negative conception of God, of spirituality, that means that which is separate from or independent from the material energy, the material energy has form. They think, okay, the opposite, the spiritual is the opposite of material, and so therefore, because material has form, then spiritual doesn't have form. Right? So they think that that's the supreme, no form. And of course, forms and relationships provide us with interactions and sometimes pain and suffering. So they want to get rid of all pain and suffering. Right? And so they think that this, that the impersonal is the supreme. But the devotees understand differently. That to know the person and to understand the reasons why he acts and the reason why he works through the impersonal energy, and that the impersonal is actually not the supreme. Right? You guys understand that. But not everybody has that appreciation. I remember when I first came to the temple, I didn't have any appreciation of the personal feature. I saw the deities and I thought, whoa, especially called Jagannath, big eyes. Whoa. And Radha Vallabha, with the shank eyes, you know, he's very hard to reconcile sometimes, because he's looking at him, at you with these very piercing glances. It's like, whoa, Krishna knows what I'm up to. So that personal dealing is hard sometimes to face. God is a person, and he either likes me or he doesn't like me. Actually, he likes me, but sometimes I'm stupid. So he acts in ways to rectify me, right? Just like our parents. Parents love us. We do something wrong, and parents go, what are you doing? Right? And we say, well, you don't really love me. You're always picking on me. Right? But the parents love us. You know, they love us. But they're picking on us. And Krishna does that too. We're thinking, oh, I don't know what you do. Parents, bah, get rid of them. Krishna, bah, too bad, go away. So the impersonals want to push the personal relationship away because it becomes too hard. And that's basically because of selfishness. We're selfish, you know. Do it, I want it. Like children. Right? I want it. You don't do that, do you? Throw a tantrum in the supermarket or in the toy shop. Because you can't have it.
Well, it wasn't.
So, but we encourage the impersonalists because that's the beginning. At least there's an appreciation of the Supreme. There's something beyond the material energy. So the Vaishnavas do offer respect to the various stages of transcendental realization. That's considered to be a transcendentalist, right? Seeing God within the material energy is a beginning. But there's more beyond. So we encourage them. Yeah, that's good. But here, what about seeing the personality behind the impersonal? Right? If there's impersonal, there's got to be personal. We know that. If I want to be impersonal to you, what do I do?
Ignore.
Turn my back.
Yeah.
Just ignore you. Right? But you know, in front of my back is my face. Right? So the devotees know, okay, there is an impersonal form, but that means also there's a personal form. Right? And we want to know the person as well. There's more to it. Right? I much prefer to talk to you, and you prefer to talk to me than talk to my back. Right? You can talk to my back. We can talk to somebody's back. But we'd like to talk to the person. So that's why we encourage them to... Yes, there's impersonal, but consider this. You can talk to the person.
How we need to see everything, all the activities are related by... from Supreme, right? And this is what we're learning. But we're also taught that we get a freedom of choice to make some decisions. So sometimes we tend to make mistakes and then we don't take accountability.
Sometimes we tend to make mistakes.
Then we don't take accountability.
Sorry?
Then we start blaming the Supreme and we don't take the accountability on ourselves that, okay, it was the Supreme personality of God or whatever. So how do
we blame the Supreme? We don't accept the fact that we're making mistakes all the time. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. And how do
we? Because we're cheaters. We have the cheating propensity. Right? So we think we're perfect, but we're not. And it's hard to wake up every morning and think, I'm a cheater. I'm a cheater. I'm always in illusion. I make mistakes. Right? What does that do to your self-esteem when you wake up in the morning and you think, I'm a cheater? I'm illusioned. I'm in illusion. In fact, that's what we do pretty much. We wake up in the morning and we're kind of like, oh, what happened? And then the first thing we do is we offer our respects to the spiritual master. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, basically. And then when you wake up in the morning, that's how you feel too, at least I do. Oof, horrible. It's interesting, isn't it? We wake up and think we're perfect. Right? But we feel so bad. And yet still we think, I'm the greatest. It's only by, somebody else's arrangement that all of my perfect decisions go wrong. So, if you look at things from a proper perspective, we can understand that we're conditioned souls. So what does that mean? Chutta. Right. What's chutta mean? Chutta, as opposed to achutta. What does chutta mean?
Fallen.
And Krishna's achutta, which means never falls down. Prabhupada explains. Right? We're chutta, that means we're fallen. But when we wake up in the morning, we think, I'm a chutta. Despite the fact we feel so terrible. Right? This is the power of the material energy. To make us think maya means that which is not. Right? So we wake up in the morning, we can't even work out what time it is or what day it is even sometimes. We wake up and think, what happened? Oh. But we still think, I'm perfect. So what's that? Illusion. Huh? It's a mistake. Our senses are imperfect. And still we try to convince ourselves that I'm okay. There was that book. I'm okay, you're okay. But we're not okay. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us, you're not okay. You're in the material world. What is it? Shamam Ritchi Jaraviyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. So our vision is the vision of the Shastra and the vision of the saints, the Acharyas. And what's that? The material world is actually a place of dukkha and dosha. What does that mean? Faults and misery. Of course, we don't harp on that too much because everybody becomes depressed. Right? But that's the reality. And why there's so much struggle in material existence. Mind you, not that there isn't struggle in spiritual existence either. But there's that vision of the Acharyas and of the Bhagavad Gita that teaches us the material world is not a place to be. But where we're meant to be is with Krishna in the spiritual world. There's also effort and struggle. But in that relationship, there's satisfaction and deep pleasure and understanding of the reality of existence. And so in that there's great satisfaction. So that's the connection with the personal, even though that also requires struggle, gives us much more satisfaction and happiness, right, than if we're pursuing those material things. So that's why the relationship with Krishna needs to be understood, and needs to be understood in the context of us being fallen and needing that protection of Krishna, right, and having to make decisions based on our relationship with Krishna, even though sometimes some of those decisions may not be totally palatable in the beginning. Right? That's Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that sometimes, especially the mode of goodness, in the beginning it's bitter. Right? But in the end, it becomes nectar. My passion is nectar in the beginning. Right? Easy, let's go and have a drink. Right? Go down the bar and have some fun. Right? Then the next morning, what happened? Right? And mode of ignorance is you don't know what you're doing in the beginning, and you can't remember what you did in the end. Some people say, the mode of ignorance people say, I had a great night last night. I can't remember what I did. That's real mode of ignorance. The mode of goodness means, in the beginning, it may, and in the beginning of the 64 items of devotional service, in the first 10, first 6, first 5, first 4 maybe even, Rupa Goswami tells us that we should be prepared to reject things that ordinarily we would like to keep. And we need to embrace things that we might not like. But if we make those kind of choices in the beginning, then we're likely... So therefore, for us, what are our choices? Get up early in the morning, chant 16 rounds. This is the first choice. Our austerities, main austerities, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. These are our choices. main choices for us.
Also, a comment in relation to the question that Sudhir was asking. I was thinking about in this world, if we see any gadget or architecture or any institution, we really appreciate the person behind it.
Mm. Yeah.
So, if you are offered the opportunity to meet that person, you really appreciate it, you jump on that. Because that would be the ultimate appreciation of what we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's actually meeting that person.
Yes.
And understanding that person. But
yes.
I'm also thinking of this in person and they're like a disease.
It just happened by accident.
The natural progression is to meet that person, but I just want to appreciate
Yeah, and you know, somebody like Steve Jobs, you know, he was very famous because he created the iPhone.
Right.
Had a big impact on everybody's lives. Of course, died, couldn't manage his way out of, couldn't design a way out of death. Right. But yeah, it's a fact. And everybody praises those people for the things that they create. But they don't want to recognize that God is the person behind the creation. And they don't want to recognize him. It's a fact. We appreciate it. We really. A piece of architecture, a car, an iPhone, is, oh, fantastic. And we glorify those people, actually. But nobody wants to glorify God, yet he's behind the whole workings of everything. No, we'll forget that guy. He's too intrusive. He's everywhere. He's controlling us all. That's not fair. Another line, last. He's got a whole book of questions in here.
Prabhu, earlier you mentioned that sometimes things happen to us and it's bewildering.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that it requires depth of character, depth of understanding. And so, what is that character and how we can build that character?
Lord Brahma says, what does Lord Brahma say? Is there a Brahma Samhita in that? Just have a quick look. Lord Brahma puts it very succinctly. Is there one there? I'll find it on my I'll find it in the database. No? Okay, Doris, I'll get it here. This is a good thing about the mobile phone. It's got everything in it. Devotion is attained by slow degrees. Right? So, to get that realization requires effort over time. By the method of constant endeavor, right? We don't give up. For self-realization, so the constant endeavor for self-realization with the help of scriptural evidence. So we perform our activities based on the recommendations of the Shastra. Theistic conduct. Dharma, following Dharma. So this is our basic devotional practices. And perseverance in practice. Constant endeavor. So, Rupa Goswami says, Utsahan Nishchayadarya Tat Tat Kama Pravartana Janas Sangachara Satovrite. So enthusiasm, patience, determination. Following the tat karma pravartana means following the regulating principles. And jana sangha, sangha tyag means giving up bad association, is very important. Especially in Kali Yuga. Everywhere, everything's saturated with bad association and that influence of Kali, everywhere. Satovritte means following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So, as Lord Brahma says, constant endeavor, following scriptural evidence, theistic conduct, that's the following all the rules and regulations, and perseverance, just being patient and diligent in performing our devotional practices, then we'll start to see everything from a spiritual perspective. And some days it'll be easier than others, right? Some days you go to the morning. I've experienced this many times. You go to the morning program, chant your rounds, and it's like you feel like you're wading through molasses, and you're not getting anywhere. Right? But then you go out on Sankirtan that day, and every word is a song, every step is a dance. People are friendly to you, you buy books, and it's like, oh, I'm empowered. Huh? Then the next day you think, oh, great, we'll do that again. Then everybody's rude to you. Right? They tell you to get lost. And you can't sell a book. This is an example. And then you think, what's going on? Yesterday I was a paramahamsa, today I can't even tie up my shoelaces. So we'll be tested. There's heaps of tests. Right? You'll have an argument with your wife over something petty, right? Trivial. You both walk away thinking, what happened? That wasn't supposed to happen. Right? You've ever had an argument with your wife? Occasionally, right? Every now and again. And you both walk away thinking, what happened? He's the man of my life, and then I'm thinking, he's disgusting, I don't want to know him. This is material energy. Material energy is so powerful. One day we're in love, the next minute it's World War III. So that's the material energy is always testing us, through very difficult circumstances. And we're supposed to maintain this equilibrium. So how to get to that? How to get to that platform of equity? And so we can appreciate what an advanced person Srila Prabhupada compared to, we'll have a squabble over, what we're going to put on our muesli for breakfast. Huh? Breakfast time, that's a dangerous time for husbands and wives. Have you noticed? Because otherwise it's the morning program. Just all devotional practice. But then at breakfast time, it's exchanges. That's where it gets stuck. The guy gets tough when we start exchanging with others, especially when we're out on Sankirtan or we're going to work or whatever. That's when things get interesting. But that tests our realization. And the process of bhakti is so powerful that even in our neophyte state, even if we don't have faith in the process, panchanga bhakti can elevate us to the experience of Krishna prema. This is the potency of bhakti. If we practice panchanga bhakti, then it immediately, even we're so unqualified, it can immediately connect us to Krishna prema. Huh? This is what Rupa Goswami teaches us. Huh? And so that's why, in a Guru Puja, in a Kirtan, everybody's jumping up and down. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. And we're all feeling ecstasy. Oh. Huh? Jai Krishna, Jai Krishna. We're all dancing. Oh, I'm a paramahamsa. Because we're connected to the Brahma. That's why we're dancing. Otherwise, you know, if we continued on from how we felt when we woke up in the morning, we'd all be like, but we don't. We feel ecstatic. But then one little exchange with somebody and there's an explosion and then we think, ooh, what happened? I was a Paramahamsa before. Now I'm a demon again. So that's a test. The test. That's why we keep coming back to the Sankhya and the Panchanga Bhakti, because that keeps on connecting. The Sankirtan connects us to that level of Krishna prema. Even though we're so unqualified. This is the power of bhakti. Bhakti is so powerful that even when we're not qualified, still we can feel the essence, the reality of the spiritual experience. We can feel the spiritual world in our kirtan, in the bhagavatam, in the worship of the deity, in the association of the devotees. Right? That's what we feel. We all feel that. Right? Were you happy in the kirtan this morning? No? You're in ecstasy. That's Krishna praying. That's what we keep coming back for. Anandam buddhivadanam pratipudam purnam ritasvadanam. Param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Right, that's what we say. All glory is to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Because it gives us an opportunity to taste the nectar for which we're always anxious. So we're always looking at that nectar, but at the same time, Krishna recalibrates, you know, puts us back into reality in the struggles of life. Struggle, but the struggle's there to remind us of where we are or where we have been, and further impetus to be where we know we should be, isn't it? Yeah. So now it's interesting. I've been reading Swami in a Strange Land now. One interesting anecdote that Yogeshwara Prabhu mentions is that Ravindra Swarup got an opportunity to read Prabhupada's correspondence in the 70s, and he discovered that Prabhupada was dealing with disasters, problems, bad relationships, people stealing money. People stealing property. You know, people say, oh, when Prabhupada was here, everything was fantastic. I can assure you that when Prabhupada was here, everything was not fantastic. There were problems all the time. And Prabhupada just had to deal with problem after problem after problem, day after day after day after day. Right? Yet, Srila Prabhupada never lost faith, never lost enthusiasm, never lost his confidence in the process of devotional service. And when his godbrothers in Vrindavan and his friends in Vrindavan were criticizing his disciples because his disciples, you know, ate with their left hand, put their bead bag on the floor, didn't know how to, you know, dress properly or talk properly or behave properly, Prabhupada said, don't criticize them, it's not good for you. Huh? Don't criticize them, it's not good for you to criticize my disciples. They've sacrificed everything to serve Krishna. Even one of his friends, one of the Goswami, proprietor of, it might have been Radha Damodata, he said, because some people were criticizing Prabhupada's disciples, and he said, and they were saying, you know, we shouldn't eat food cooked by these people, they're so low class. This kind of things that people were saying about Prabhupada's disciples. And he said, no, these devotees have sacrificed their lives. We should take anything from their hands. And so there's different appreciations. But it's interesting, Prabhupada has so much faith, even though he was facing so many problems within his emerging society, still he never lost faith. And he always glorified and appreciated the activities and the endeavors of his disciples and the potency of the process of devotional service. And he always presented ISKCON, this is the movement that will save the world. Huh? Yeah, if anybody knew what was wrong with ISKCON, Prabhupada was the person. He knew it intimately. He never lost faith. So that's, I thought that was a really nice demonstration of Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, when Prabhupada was sick and you know, he was in his final months, the devotees went and asked him, because common knowledge that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left the planet dissatisfied with his disciples. He was dissatisfied, especially with his leading disciples. And so the devotee said, Prabhupada, are you leaving because you're dissatisfied with us? And Prabhupada said, no, not at all. I'm fully satisfied with my, more than satisfied with the efforts of my disciples. He had such great, strong faith in them. Okay. Andrasimad Bhagavatam Kijaya Sadhguru Bhakti Jaya Yoga.